Thank you everyone for joining our AJG podcast. My name is Jasmohan Bajaj. I'm the co-editor-in-chief and professor of medicine at Virginia Commonwealth University. And on behalf of my other co-editor-in-chief, Dr. Milly Long, professor of medicine in University of North Carolina, Chapel Hill, we're delighted to have Dr. Ahmed Talbani, who currently is a third-year GI fellow at University of New Mexico, along with many of his colleagues, including Dr. Paletti. We are delighted to have him on board to talk about a recently published paper in the American Journal of Gastroenterology called Liver Cleaning Imposters, an analysis of popular online liver supplements. Welcome, Dr. Talbani.
Thank you very much for the warm introduction and this very kind invitation, Dr. Bajaj. I'm very excited to be here with you today.
Great. So this topic has a lot of interest. And of course, for the readers you and listeners, you also know there's a nice editorial written by Dr. Syriac Abbey Phillips that you must check out with this. So a few questions. What were the main reasons behind embarking on the analyses?
Yeah, so it was mainly driven by our patients. In clinic, I was increasingly getting questions about supplement use to help with liver disease. So we decided to dive further into it. We have three primary motivations. First, the commercial scale. The liver supplement market is large and growing, and detox messaging is pervasive. Patients are being exposed to these claims daily through social media, online marketplaces, and influencer marketing. Yet the basis for many of these claims is either weak or absent. Second, clinical relevance. So a supplement-associated drug-induced liver injury is not rare. Herbal and dietary supplements account for roughly 20% of drug-induced liver injury cases in the U.S. in prospective data. And this is not trivial. And third, the disconnect between marketing and physiology. The liver is already a highly efficient detoxifying organ. The narrative that it passively accumulates toxins requiring over-the-counter cleansing lacks physiological grounding. So we wanted to systematically analyze what patients are actually purchasing and what claims are being made.
Sounds good. And part of this point is the amount of the market is pretty huge. So how many patients did you anticipate, at least in the United States, are on these therapies, which potentially can be called alternative as well? So do you have a sense of how many patients and how many dollars this might actually be worth?
Yeah, so we did not measure natural prevalence directly in this study. However, complementary and alternative medicine use among adults with the liver disease is well documented in U.S. data. Within our sample alone, the top 20 so-called liver cleanse products on Amazon were estimated to sell approximately 1.5 million units per year, generating roughly $39 million annually. And those figures represent only 20 products on one platform. They do not include other online retailers, brick-and-mortar stores, or international sales. The true exposure burden is likely substantially higher.
Well, that is really impressive that you were able to actually cut the wheat through the chaff and come across this 20 supplements that you put in the paper. So what strategy did you use to determine the 20 supplements? And I know you used only one platform. That's a substantially large platform, but you used Amazon, right? Is that correct?
Mm-hmm.
So what is the strategy that you used to narrow it down from all these hundreds of supplements to the 20 that you actually ended up studying deeper?
So we wanted to capture what a typical consumer would encounter. We searched Amazon using the keywords liver and cleanse, intentionally targeting products explicitly marketed as detoxifying rather than general support formulations. We selected the top 20 high-strength products using default search engines on a single predefined date. And to minimize personalization bias, we used a brand new account and private browsing settings and archived the product pages the same day. This allowed us to evaluate marketing claims, ingredients, customer reviews, and estimated sales data in a systematic way.
So what was the reason for choosing this strategy as opposed to just trying to do a more generic ability of actually figuring out who does what, like some other studies have done? What separates this strategy from the other published data?
So the first reason was the fact that we targeted Amazon as because it's the largest online retailer in e-commerce in the U.S. So we believe that provided us with a general exposure to what consumer behaviors are towards these supplements. Second, the reason we targeted the best-selling supplements is because this is what our consumers are going for. Typically, a lot of the purchase behaviors are based on what's selling best and based on reviews. So these top 20 selling supplements even though they didn't have strong data backing their claims, they had very high reviews, which drove patients' purchasing patterns. And hence, what we wanted to emulate or capture was what you or I or someone without necessarily strong medical information would purchase based on what they would see online.
So which ended up being your top ingredients that were actually the most bought / engaged with in this platform?
Yeah, so really it wasn't a specific ingredient within the product. Each product had a concoction of multiple ingredients. The most common one tended to be, we saw a lot of milk thistle, turmeric. There was also
dandelion
root. Yeah, there was also selenium. So there were multiple ingredients with that very strong established scientific or research backing.
Which health claims were the most common that you encountered among these 20 supplements that you focused on?
Yeah, so for a start, every product claimed to eliminate toxins or perform a liver detox or cleanse. We found that approximately 90% of them claimed to enhance the liver function, about 70% and it claimed digestive benefits. And the interesting part is that about 70% of them claimed scientific or research backing. Many of them also emphasized the premium quality, however you define that is. And surprisingly, many of them were doctor formulated. And what we found was the core narrative was consistent. Toxins apparently accumulate silently and require intervention on our livers. And that framing drives the consumer urgency despite lack of any standardized definition.
So among the many, many things that are concerning, and you had briefly mentioned this in the past, what is the risk of herbal or drug-induced liver injury with any of these supplements? Not specifically this supplements per se, but other supplements that could actually also be, you know, associated. So what is the risk of that, and what should we be worried about when we are discussing these with patients?
We know that from U.S. prospective cohorts that herbal and dietary supplements account for approximately 20% of drug-induced liver injury. In our product sample, about 10% contain green tea extract, which has documented hepatotoxicity. There's also the issue of adulteration. Approximately 10% of herbal supplements in one analysis contained undisclosed pharmaceutical compounds. The risk profile is really multifactorial. We have the intrinsic hepatotoxicity, idiosyncratic reactions, contamination, dose variability, and interactions. And unfortunately, as you know, severe cases can progress to acute liver failure and transplantation.
So this is a big concern, and it's a growing concern amongst many other groups. The Drug-Induced Liver Injury Network in the NIH-sponsored network has also spent a lot of time focusing on this. So again, I would like to reiterate and thank Dr. Telbany for bringing the herbal dilly. But the biggest problem here is not really the herbal dilly or anything else, but it's actually ineffectiveness and patients thinking that this they might be spending money towards things that might help their liver. What are the other issues that are concerning about the use of these liver cleanses for patients who might actually, or people or consumers who may actually look at it and say, oh, this might help my liver? So what, as a doctor, what would you be more worried about as well, in addition to the dilly for these patients?
Yeah, to your point, yeah, there are several important issues. One major concern really is delayed care. Yeah, patients with liver disease who may substitute supplements for guideline-directed management. There's also the risk of drug interactions. Many supplements affect cytochrome P450 pathways or anticoagulation mechanisms. Patients often take multiple supplements simultaneously, which increases cumulative risk. Additionally, some products contain numerous components, making it difficult to identify the specific causative agent if liver injury does occur. You also have placebo-driven reassurance. In our sample, for example, we found a significantly high rating of our supplements, with an average rating of 4.5 stars, 4.3 to 4.5 stars, for any of these supplements. And these higher ratings may reflect expectancy effects rather than objective hepatic improvement. Finally, polypharmacy stacking. Many patients, as I mentioned, take multiple supplements simultaneously, compounding risk.
These are all very important things. And in addition to the major financial burden that the patients might have, it's time related to their what they would actually then have time or their energy to actually follow the guideline-directed care bit that you mentioned. The issue comes in here is because the Dietary Supplement Health and Education Act of the FDA does not require these manufacturers to submit this to the FDA. So in addition to being aware of these, what all should we be counseling our patients or talking to our trainees about looking forward in medical care to actually figure out how to manage these patients?
That's a great question. And from a patient perspective, I think it's key, really. It all comes down to taking proper history. Make sure you always ask your patients about supplement intake. They do bring it up. I highly recommend not to be confrontational with the patient, and shouldn't be a gotcha moment, but rather ask them why they pursue these alternative pathways for their liver care, and provide the proper education for the patients and take the time to actually educate them about that. Because keep in mind that this brief encounter that you'll have with your patients counteracted by influencer videos, by hours and hours of social media and pervasive marketing once they leave your office. So it is essential to actually take the time and sit down with the patients and educate them about these issues. From a policy perspective, I think to your point, under the Dietary Supplement Health and Education Act, supplements can really enter the market without FDA pre-approval for safety or efficacy. So we definitely would recommend the regulatory motorization. Potential reforms can include mandatory pre-market safety data, standardized manufacturing verification, improved post-marketing surveillance, and clear substantial requirements for marketing claims. To keep it simple, I think we should have a checklist when we see our patients where we should routinely screen for supplement use. And regardless whether the answer is yes or no, cancel our patients on evidence-based management. I think that would simplify the workflow and take it even out of the thinking process where it's part of a checklist. We go in and routinely ask our liver patients about supplement use.
So last but not the least, there are many patients who use traditional things like Chinese medicine, Ayurveda, and things like that, which are also considered quote-unquote healthy. But a lot of this actually does not even register because many of those names are very unfamiliar to people who are practicing in the United States, unless you are in a place where there's a lot of populations, people who come from abroad or who actually still have significant ties. So in addition to the supplements, what is your strategy for us to actually ensure that we are also asking for those traditional things that may not have a manufacturer based in the United States or maybe actually compounded somewhere else?
That's the million-dollar question, yes, for compounds, because we can go down the rabbit hole here where we investigate these compounds and delve further into what exactly they're made up of. However, I do not think that would be technically feasible most of the times. I think it all comes down to education and letting our patients know that the fact that it's natural does not necessarily mean that it's safe. Many of these natural compounds are pharmacologically active and dose dependent. There's manufacturing variability, contamination, adulteration. There are real concerns. When it comes to unknown compounds, I would go around with the same advice with a regular supplements where I'd refer to our patients to avoid taking them given the lack of evidence. That said, to your point, there are definitely strong cultural barriers that need to be encountered in order to actually have the trust of our patients and be able to convince them to hold off on using these supplements, especially if these are age-old habits. So I think it is important to establish that strong rapport with our patients first before even addressing their issues, so that when we actually address that issue, it'd be more receptive.
So part of my question really was also to educate our trainees to identify not only supplements that are available on the marketplace, but also patients who might be taking the supplements that are not advertised in the marketplace and that could be, quote, more traditional. So we have to expand our horizons a little bit and figure out whether the patient is taking some of these medications. And I think the underlying fact really here is that some of the advice that we give to our patients, especially in early stage liver disease, is usually lifestyle driven, which is very difficult to follow.
Yes.
So therefore, part of the understanding is that maybe our liver can be propped up by doing things such as like this. So it might be an easier way out. And I think we have to counteract that very forcefully in a way that it actually is respectful. And I appreciate your paper. It was very well received. And I urge all our listeners to check it out. Thank you, Dr. Thelbeny, for this excellent recording. Again, for those who are listening, this is Liver Cleaning Imposters, an analysis of popular online liver supplement. Dr. Thelbeny, T-E-L-B-A-N-Y, is the first author. It was published in the Red Journal, and it has a nice editorial by Dr. Syriac Abbey Phillips. Thank you again for your time, Dr. Thelbeny. This was an excellent paper and an excellent podcast.
Thank you very much, Dr. Bajaj, for this wonderful opportunity to present our research.